the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
The Sound Off Podcast. The podcast about broadcast with Matt Cundall. Starts now.
This week, my guest is Jillian Foote from Q104 in Halifax. She's also well known for her stint at 100.3 The Bear in Edmonton, where she co-hosted the morning show with Paul Brown and Yukon Jack for over 13 years. The Notorious Morning Show had an excellent run, and we're going to spend some time unpacking that success. And we're going to find out how life is like three time zones away as she returned to her home province of Nova Scotia. Jillian was taught radio by Dave Bannerman, who was one of my first program directors and also featured in our series a few years ago. All told, it's pretty cool that your resume features two of the best rock radio stations in North America. Jillian Foote joins me from the Stingray Studios of Q104 in Halifax.
It's 11 o'clock where you are and you're still drinking coffee. That will be something we'll talk about.
Yeah, it happens when you've got two kids in the thick of it at 40.
Man, I don't look at you as 40.
I'm 42. Yeah, trade me in. I'm damaged goods now.
Okay, stop. Damaged goods? Now, that's an expression I'm completely familiar with. That term was bandied about the hallways and airways of 100.3 The Bear in Edmonton throughout the 90s and apparently well into the 2000s. The Attitude Era of wrestling and radio seemed to go hand in hand back then, when every radio promo drew inspiration from Ric Flair.
Yeah, I dumped her. She's damaged goods, Randy. She's been mine. How about that, Randy? Is that hard to swallow?
That's cold.
Oh, yeah, it should be cold.
Be warned. There are more wrestling references ahead.
Damaged goods. You picked that up from Yukon, didn't you?
You know, I've picked up a lot from Yukon over the years. Like, you know, from our boss, our leadership, Paul, all of it. You just start to sound like one another, think like one another, smell like one another. It all becomes so intertwined. Any show that you've been together for a long time, it really is just like any other relationship where it's at some degree, some sort of dysfunction. And, you know, every family is like that. Every show is like that. So yeah, you really do. You start picking up on each other's isms and all of a sudden you're cranky just like them.
I noticed that because that's a wrestling reference that I don't think you would necessarily pick up on your own.
Probably, yeah, definitely would be a Yukon thing.
Well, here you are. You're back in Nova Scotia. So I believe that's where it started anyway, way back when. And I want to say it was Shubenacadie.
No.
Tatamagouche.
Yes. Born and raised in a small town, Tatamagouche, Nova Scotia, on the North Shore.
So how does anybody who's born in Tatamagouche think, yeah, I want to get into radio one day?
You know, I had a huge influence with Q104 and C103 in Moncton. So Halifax and Moncton in Tatamagouche, you could get both of those stations. And back then, especially overnights, it was the Rock Radio Network. And Andy Frost and Kenny Coghlan used to be on. And I was just so infatuated with listening to them and recording when I was a teenager, like 13, 14, 15, 16. I mean, it went on and on and on, where I would just listen to them and listen to how they talked. And I just loved their voice and their sound. And it wasn't really anything in terms of that's what I want to do. I just really enjoyed being kind of geeking out to radio, calling in on Desert Island Discs on C103 and listening for the Q Jets on Q104, growing up to listening to all of that kind of radio. And it wasn't until grade 11 when we had a career day and everyone is just so drawn to all these universities wanting to get these degrees. And, you know, I want to be a nurse. I want to be a dentist. Like, it was a thing. Like, you had a job. It was a career. I don't know. I was kind of thinking, well, am I going to be a teacher? Like, nothing really you know, sparked my interest. And then there was this one girl who got accepted into King's Tech in the Valley with radio and television arts. And I thought, wow, that would be so cool. I think I want to try that. So anyway, I went home and told my mom, and we talked to the career person at my school. And she said, you know, this is a really, really, really hard course to get into. You probably won't get in. It's 30 seats. They accept 30 people. Over 200 people apply. Your chances are quite slim. And I was so discouraged in hearing that. And I told my mom, I said, you know, I'm not going to get in. And she kind of sat me down and she said, well, if you think that, what can we do to make you get in? What are some things we can try to do that's going to make you stand out from other people? And so she said, why don't you call the radio station in Truro and see if you can shadow or do anything? And I said, okay, well, that's a good idea. So I did. I think it was Mike Allard, who is in Ontario at the time. I was knocking on his door, and Angela Rose, and I just kind of said, I'll do anything. You know, I'll take out the garbage, but what I really want to do is be a creep and watch the jock in the studio do all of the stuff that they're doing. That's all I wanted to do. You know, and so they had me do some rewriting of news stories, which I hated. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to sit there and watch them be on air. So that's kind of how it all started. And thankfully, with my mom's help and being able to go and put that sort of on my resume and meeting David Bannerman down there, and finally, luckily, got into the course and loved it ever since.
Wait a second. Did you not have a bedtime? Because you mentioned you were listening to all night radio, but it was grade 11. So did you not have bedtime? What's the story?
I used to listen to the radio constantly. It was never off in my room. And my mom used to say, that can't be healthy. Like, what are you doing? Like, turn that off. And I would be going into her bedroom and getting the cordless phone. Hang up, read all, hang up, read all. I think the number was like 1-800 something 22 rock. I just remember it was R-O-C-K, and I'd be hang up, read all, you know, calling Andy Frost and Kenny Coughlin, trying to make a request and, you know, trying to talk to them. But yeah, I should have had a bedtime, hence, you know, failing out of math in grade 11 and 12, I'm sure.
Do you know what the last four digits are to spell out rock on a telephone right now?
Is it 7265 or 7264?
7625 is the correct answer.
It's kind of funny, the things that you say, like sometimes when we're doing traffic lines and stuff, I still need to read it like, I'm Ron Burgundy.
So you get up to the Valley, and David Bannerman, who's been a subject on this podcast before, we've had him on. One of the best programs in all of Canada was that King's Tech course. The number of people who've come out of it, you and Jax and Fearless Fred and so many others that I listed in a previous episode. But tell me about the experience of going to King's Tech to study radio and TV arts.
You know, it really is a up-and-coming radio person wet dream. It's, you know, camaraderie with your classmates. You all have the same end goal, whether it be on radio or TV. And just, you know, the being young and sort of learning who you are and being a geek and trying to be on air for your first time. And you mentioned Fred Kennedy, Fearless Fred. You know, he's been a longtime friend of mine, and we went to school together. I was a class ahead of him. I was the first one. I just remember trying to sort of keep him calm when it was his first time being on the air, which would be AVR, you know, a country radio station in a very small town in the Valley of Nova Scotia, and being overnights, you know, not a whole lot of listeners, but a great playing field to sort of make those first mistakes and stuff. So it was a lot of fun, you know, learning from some great people and getting the morning show ready. Because back then, I think, I don't even remember if it was CDs or if it was actual carts that we were lining up for the show. You know, for Wilf Cornell was the guy at AVR, a big name down in the Valley back in the day. But radio was awesome. I mean, Dave Bannerman, he was a fun and just the voice too. Like, that's what got me. There's an it factor about Dave Bannerman. And I think that it is a lot like that when you're on the radio. There's a lot of personalities and people that stand out and stay with you. And Dave is one of those for me. He was always a great example of a leader for me, and a cheerleader too. He's someone that can be in your corner. And you feel that. So I had a lot of confidence learning from him.
Where did you do your internship program, because I was always good for a couple of students from King's Tech, even if I was halfway across the country. Love getting the students in to work for 3 weeks. Where did you do yours?
My first one was at CKDH in Amherst. It was a Light Rock 900, an AM station. Dave March was my program director, and he's got the voice. He's got the pipes. He's got the old school pipes. And I actually got a job offer from them in my second year. I actually left school early and took that offer and didn't look back. So I actually didn't finish my second year. I left right before the last semester started.
Shout out to Ian Hanemansing from CBC, who did some time at that radio station just after he went to Mount Allison University. It's amazing all the geeky radio stuff I know.
I love it, though. I love that type of stuff. We all do.
When did you first actually get a check for what you were doing in radio?
I believe it would have been the year 2000. That's when I would have started. So it would have been in, I would say, spring 2000.
Where, though?
Oh, at CKDH in Amherst.
So you did turn that into a job. Excellent.
Yeah, I got a job offer from them. So I actually worked there 3 months to the day. And then went to Truro at The Mix and worked there for a couple of years.
So both those stations can be heard in your hometown. So your family knows this is a legit career decision that you've made and you're cashing in on it.
Yeah, for sure. It's not like you could get away with anything if you didn't show up for work. What are you doing the night before? Not that I ever did, but yeah, they big fans. I mean, my mom's got a shrine of stuff over the years and has sharpied in a lot of my shirts in billboard pictures, if you know what I mean. The low-cut shirts, she's sharpied them in to show her friends. So she's been very excited about those those questionable billboard pictures.
When you look back on them, though, how do you feel about them now?
I love it. I'm totally fine with that. I think that things sell. I love the grit. I love the making an eyebrow raise. I love pushing the envelope. It is in my blood. I love all that. So none of it really phases me at all.
When did you leave home? And by leave home, when did you take your radio career and sort of leave the listening area of your hometown?
So Halifax, after Truro, went to Halifax. But the big jump would have been from Halifax to Edmonton to work for the Bear morning show there.
So Ryan Zimmerman would have hired you.
Yes. Yep.
And who did you get to work with off the top?
So Ryan Zimmerman hired myself, Paul Brown, who was from Fredericton. He was working in Victoria at the time, and Yukon Jack. And he has been in Edmonton. He's a born and raised. He's like the mayor of Mill Woods out there. Like, he owns that city. His profile still owns that city, and he's an awesome guy. And the three of us were together for 13 years. We had a number one show out there, and it was a heritage station, and the leadership of Ryan Zimmerman and then Rob Vavrick. We had awesome leadership. Like, Zim was like the fourth person on our show when we first started. Like, he elevated my game from the get-go, especially, you know, coming from being super green and super young and then going out to a major market and, you know, starting off a brand new show. We took those ratings to an all-time low, our very first book, and sales were, their heads were blowing up, and took about a couple more books after that. We were number one. And when we launched with the really tough contest during the Oilers Stanley Cup run, that is what really escalated our show and being in the community all the time. That's what was the height of the show taking off.
That's a long time sort of in there, because that was 2006 that the Oilers did that big run.
And it was 04 that I moved out.
Okay. So just thinking about that, you have a morning show on the air. You've got Yukon Jack, you've got Paul Brown, and then yourself. It's always a good sign when the first book sucks.
Yeah. You set the bar low.
What did you all have to learn about each other in order to make it work?
Well, we knew we were really at that age where, you know, you don't have kids, you don't have a lot of demands and obligations. So we could literally be out at every chili cook-off, every event. we were really trying to just, like, for a lack of a better term, whore ourselves out to owning that city. And that's what we did. And we did absolutely everything from charity to hosting this to going out to where P1s would be, bar gigs, going and doing Jumbotron work for all of the sports stuff. Like, we didn't leave any rock unturned when it came to that. We really built that show as quick as we could, as fast as we could. And we really knew it would take at least 2 years. It takes 2 years, you know, a good four books before people start registering that name in the city. It seems like a long time, but that it takes a long time to build up a profile in the city. And we were determined to. We loved it. We absolutely dialed in and married that concept early.
There's so much to unpack with Edmonton because it's such a competitive market, but you had incredible leadership in the building. Thinking back to that era, I mean, not only did you have Ryan Zimmerman as your program director, but, you know, there's Marty Forbes, who's tied into everything Edmonton, and he still is today. So tell me a little bit about the leadership in the building and how they moved you along to escalate, you know, your value to number one.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right about that. Marty Forbes and the last name Forbes in general, Jerry Forbes, his brother down in Calgary. I mean, he owned that city as well. And yeah, leadership from the start, from the top up, it was a huge help. And the support and elevation from them, you know, pushing us along the way and buying all the billboards in the city, marketing us everywhere. We're talking, you know, buses in every bar, and they really did their homework there. And Marty Forbes was extremely dialed into the charity aspect of the city. The United Way was his baby. We had the Bear Children's Fund that all of the money went to the children's stallery, and every cent went to our community. And we all treated that as like an insurance policy. It's in our backyard. You never know when you're going to need it. So you donate and you help out because, yeah, you never know when you're going to need it. And you can never go wrong with charity. You know, when you're making donations of hundreds of thousands of dollars and delivering teddy bears to sick kids on Christmas Day, and you're doing ridiculous things on the air with a really tough contest, there certainly is a level of forgiveness. You love them because they give back and they're crazy and we want to listen to them. It's that juxtaposition with, you know, being crazy on the air, but you're a human too, still trying to pay back the community that you live in. You know, you're one of us. You're one of those people.
Edmonton, big car town, big trucks, commuting. And there's a bit of a billboard war that goes on because you may have had a lot of billboards, but you also had some competition in the marketplace because K97 was renowned for their billboards. That's your biggest competition, but every fall or every spring, they come out with a good one too.
Yeah, and they really stuck in the wheelhouse of their upper P1s. They were a little bit older. They targeted older. We targeted more of that sort of younger rock as well. I guess it just depends on your age and it's subjective, but I think that we just came off as a little bit more cooler, a little bit more younger, a little bit more hip in that sense. We pushed the envelope, but we were a little bit more edgy on a sexy level, as opposed to sort of the cheesy cliche stuff that they would do.
What were the keys to all getting along as a morning show?
There has to be a level of respect for one another. And for us, genuinely, they were like my brothers and they were like my big brothers. Like any listener or any guy that would like do something wrong or hurt my feelings, like they jump to, you know, like, you don't hurt her, she's ours, you know. So we were very much like brother and sister. And sure, we had massive moments of like, especially UConn and Paul, like they were at each other's heads at times. Like, you know, Paul's very gray and Uke is very black and white. You know, he's a gentleman. He does everything the right way. And Paul just kind of, well, you know, he can really push the buttons and knows where to push UConn's buttons. So they sometimes didn't see eye to eye. And I was a little bit more of the voice of reason or the instigator, one or the other. And I think that it just takes, you know, just like any relationship, the leadership part for a PD's got to jump in and say, you know, that's when they have to say what you can or cannot get away with. You got to reel in your, you know, entertainment if they're getting out of hand. And, you know, there's some shows out there that need a therapist to some degree. And I think our show definitely, especially in the early days, of full of piss and vinegar, and it wouldn't have hurt to have a therapist on the show for sure. But I mean, we've definitely matured over the years. We all have kids now, but that was certainly back then. And, you know, in the height of all the craziness, but yeah, just the respect, liking one another off the air. We were always never fans of asking questions you don't know the answer to, where just like you're setting someone up for failure on the air if they don't know the answer. Just little things. We had our agreements and disagreements, but we were so much alike and we thought alike. We knew sort of where each other were going that it was never really an issue. We just genuinely liked one another, which I think is huge.
I always say that the best morning shows are the ones with the codependent relationship.
Yeah. Well, our boss used to say, you know, we're going out for, you know, a team building or a staff function. Just don't sit next to one another. Go and talk to the rest of the station. Like, we were just tied at each other's hip. But that's just our comfort zone. You know, we were always together and it's just zinger after zinger, one up and out, you know, one another. And so our boss used to say, you know, you don't want to intimidate anyone. Just break up and try to go and get to know other people. But we always felt like that was our safe haven of sort of being sort of like tied at the hip all the time.
In just a second, Jillian and I get raw. The Edmonton marketing wars. Getting homesick after 17 years. The upsides and downsides of a move from Edmonton to Halifax. And those program directors who were the glue that kept it all together. In the meantime, take a moment, breathe deeply, and see if you can wiggle your way out of this figure four leg lock.
The Sound Off Podcast.
I want to say that you had just the two program directors overseeing that morning show. First Zim, and then Rob Vavrick, who succeeded him. So what's the difference between the two of them?
You know, the difference is both great, both got along great with both of them. They've been a huge supporter of mine and in my corner. And I guess just off the top of my head, Ryan just kind of really had that magic of sort of that leadership and that fourth person on the show. And maybe it's because he's the guy that originally brought us together. You know, we leaned on him because he was the only person we knew when we were first hired. So I guess it kind of started that way. But he would even be texting our phones, listening to the show. Like, he was a fan as well as our boss. So that kind of stuck out in my mind. As for Vav, I mean, he was always very organized and great at getting back to one another. And with both of our PDs, those guys, we met after every show. Even after 13 years of being on the air, we didn't just leave at 10. We're in the office, we're shooting the shit. We're going over ideas. We're doing this. We're doing that. And just, you know, venting with one another, being on the same page, which I liked. You know, some people don't want to meet. Some people do. I've always been used to meeting. I've always been used to having a fire lit under my ass to be prepared, having stuff. And both PDs really had that. But yeah, like I said, I mean, I love them both. They were really great to me. And so,
you always know where you stand with Vav, because if he looks over top of his glasses at you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Lachlan Cross, his line about Vavrick was always, I don't expect a hug from Vav. And so I guess that would sort of mean, you know, like, no news is good news with Vav. So, I mean, if you're hearing from Vav, because he was always so slammed and busy, we still met with him, but no news is good news. So if you're not hearing from him, you're keeping between the ditches. You're good. You're good. You're golden.
Yeah, the Bear is just, you know, one of these legendary radio stations that just had so many great people go through it. Lachlan Cross, I think probably Fearless Fred was working there around the same time you were. Is that possible?
Yeah, he was, which was like, what? We're both going to work at the Bear? And I mean, that was his dream to always work at the Bear. Like, he was a military brat, so he moved all over. And he lived in Edmonton for a lot of his upbringing until the latter years when he moved out to the Maritimes. But yeah, working with Fred was awesome. I mean, he'd be doing afternoons, we were doing mornings, and so our schedules never really met all that much until our jock meetings on Thursdays. But he had lots of bar gigs, and so, you know, when you can get free drinks, that's when you go and see one another and talk off air, so to speak.
Imaging and production for radio made easy from Megatrax Production Music. Add a sense of British flair to your productions with London's No Sheet Music. From the team behind Wise Buddha, No Sheet Music are musicians and music fans. It's as simple as that. Their albums range from contemporary to classical, orchestral to electronic, and they're always usable and sonically excellent. Don't miss the hottest sounds by adding Deep East music to your deal. Music from Deep East elevates a story and amplifies a message with a serious buzz. Always fresh and intuitive, and of course, the highest quality, they've always got their ears to the ground for the latest worldwide trends. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
Just before we start the show, I want to thank Matt Fogarty, one of our great supporters, who is the imaging voice for great radio stations like Froggy 99.9 Fargo, North Dakota, MyFM, which can be heard across Ontario, and the legendary Oz FM in St. John's, Newfoundland. If you want to have Matt Fogarty be a part of your station, reach out to him at mattfogartyvo.com.
Yeah, it was right around 2007, 2008 that the bar gigs began to start to diminish. And I think social media had a lot to do with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we really had a lot of bar gigs, like wing nights. And I mean, it's good money. It's good exposure. It's especially in that rock format. It's P1 Central.
Tell me, was it hard to date and have relationships with people while you're busy doing this morning show where you got to get up early, where you're going to be at bars all the time? How does anybody have a relationship or a dating life?
You know, that's a really good question, because I've had this conversation with Paul and Yuk before, because for guys, it is like you've got this profile. You can give out free tickets. The girls want to be with you. And the guys are just like, you know, you can go out on dates and it's easy for them. But for me, the biggest thing that you work on the whole time, your profile, it actually in turn became an insecurity to me, because I was single for a long time. And I felt like if I open myself up, are they going to like me for me? Or are they liking me for the chick that's on the billboard and that just wants to say, hey, you know, I hooked up with so-and-so. And so I was always extremely private when it came to stuff like that. And I was very picky and choosy. And I didn't want people to know where I lived. So it became really a struggle, you know, being a woman and being a woman in rock. Just even thinking back to it, it was, I wouldn't necessarily say struggle, but it was a challenge. It was a real challenge. I actually thought I'd never find somebody in Edmonton because of my profile and who I was, because it became so big, you know, at the height. And so, but for guys, they loved it. I mean, Paul was just like, girl here, girl there, girl here. Like he was just, you know, loving that. And I mean, Yukon, he had met his wife early on when I first moved out there. So he's a stand-up guy, found the love of his life, settled down. That was that. But yeah, it was harder for me. And yeah, I really did struggle with that.
Back in 2007, someone could look at him and just want to swipe right on the billboard. But today, that's the way everybody dates. Everybody looks at the picture, swipes right.
And that was my fear. I didn't want to be that, because I am a old-fashioned person. I want to settle down with someone, somebody that's family-oriented, that is, you know, a lot of fun and likes to travel, like all those things. Not necessarily saying it has to be a fairy tale, but at the same time, I don't want to be used, or I don't want to be the brunt of the joke. I don't want to, you know, so it always sort of worried me. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting question. I have battled that for so many years.
But I think it would probably be easier if you went and at that time, and maybe you did, date a known entity in the marketplace. So maybe a football player or maybe a hockey player, because that would cancel out the celebrity sort of, you know, status that you have, or the known status.
Yeah. And I did that. I dated a football guy on the Esks for a while, almost a year. And I dated an Oiler at one time as well, and some musicians. But at the same time, it's like, especially, you know, with the young Oilers and the rock bands going through, it's like, you know, it's area codes. Like, this doesn't just happen to one person. It's, you know, I'm not oblivious to the fact that they're not looking to settle down. They don't care.
That's a whole other level of dysfunction where you have performers, right? You're a performer, they're a performer. And to try to sort of maneuver and steer a relationship through that is equally as hard.
Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you see those Oilers or whatever it might be, professional athletes, they are marrying people that they can trust, that know that they love them. Those, you know, high school sweetheart sort of stories. It's either that or they're picking up, you know, a real heat score and they're like, wow, you're out of my league, but I'm an athlete now, so I'll marry you. Have my offspring.
Did you say heat score?
Is that another wrestling term?
I don't know. Where did you pick that term up?
Probably the guys. Just hanging out with guys over the years.
When did the show end and why did it end?
The show ended in October of 2016. And that was because I went on mat leave with my daughter. And Paul and Yukon were really at each other's throats at that point. And Paul had kind of been putting out there, you know, what would happen if I left? What would happen if I left the show? And, you know, Yuke, of course, being a heel that he is, it would be the best day of my life. You know, like, he's just playing into it. And I was like, you know, dude, like, are you serious? Or are you just like, are we throwing this against the wall? Like, is this a thought? Is this a wish? Like, well, I don't know. Like, well, what would happen if I left? And so, you know, well, dude, you know, if you want to leave, or if this is like what you want to have happen, then you've got to do you. You've got to do what you're going to do. So that started the conversations. And this is when Paul was kind of wondering what I'm going to do. He really had this desire, because he's got dual citizenship. His mom is American, so he could go and work in the States at any time. He wanted to go to LA and try acting. So he had this sort of, you know, pipe dream, or something that was this fuel that was, you know, trying to fuel the fire with that dream or whatever. And once I went on mat leave, that's when things, I wasn't there and they were just kind of doing their thing. So I wasn't there to see things, but that's when things started to slowly dissolve, and Paul decided that that was it. And he decided that he wanted to move on. And so after I went on mat leave, you know, ratings and stuff, the dynamic was completely different. And after that, on my mat leave, they really changed it up. Stu Myers decided that he'd like to see two guys on the morning show instead of the three person. So when I was on mat leave, that's when Vav came to me. It was like, you know, we're kind of moving some things around. I know it wasn't his decision. It was definitely a Stu Myers move. And he said, what do you think about coming back and doing middays? And at that time, that was when it was Jess Jackson, a good friend of mine, the midday girl. She was going on a mat leave. So I was coming back to replace a mat leave. So that really made me nervous. I thought it was pretty sketchy, but it is what it is. And so that's what I did. But then we were in meetings and stuff and decided that, you know, I want to do mornings. It's what I love. So that's when I went and did mornings on the sister station, Virgin. And so it transpired into that. And then I went on another mat leave and effed off. And that was that.
Tell me about your husband, because we skipped over that.
Oh, right. I call him Dilfy. He's awesome. His family is originally from Czech, and he's born and raised in Edmonton. And he went out of school and did culinary. So he's a Red Seal chef. And after that, he took a business degree. And he got into sales after doing restaurant stuff, owning and working in the restaurant industry. It's pretty cutthroat, and the hours and stuff are the opposite of what normal people usually do. And so he got into sales. And when we were in Edmonton, he was selling big equipment for Brandt and John Deere. I got the green light to move out east. And thankfully, he's very supportive of that. And we didn't have a whole lot of family support once we had our kids. They're 5 and 2. We've got a son and a daughter, a daughter and a son. And yeah, so having all my family back in the Maritimes is huge. It's been, I think, 7 years since I've been to the Maritimes for Christmas. So this Christmas is extra special.
So what's that discussion like? Because you're moving, I guess you're moving out of Virgin at that point. You're moving out of Edmonton. You're looking at the Maritimes. So how's that conversation go? Because quite often that conversation is generally, you know, the guy who's like, you're coming with me. And to move 3 time zones away, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty major. And I'm extremely thankful that he's very supportive and open-minded. I mean, he's a real go-getter. He understands that. And we just got to the point where we were just so busy in the thick of no babysitters, no help, no sleepovers, you know, nothing. So it just really came to mind quickly that family is number one. And I just had mentioned it to him. We were in Canmore just on a little trip. And I actually kind of got a little emotional and said, you know, I'm really starting to get, I never thought I would get homesick because I'd been in Edmonton for 17 years at this point. And not until I had kids did it make me realize that, you know, I'm getting homesick for the feeling of family. And it really does change you in that way. And so he said, well, let's try it. You know, Edmonton's not really scratching my back anyway. And so let's try it. I'll try something new and see if there's a transfer that I can get, and let's see what happens. So anyway, that's when I thought, okay, do I have the green light? We're going to do this. And so that's when I just started. I was in discussions with another company at the time about a job offer in Halifax. And I thought, okay, well, if I don't get a hold of Q104 and possibly take this other gig, I need to, because it, to me, it would have been full circle working for a station I grew up listening to. I messaged Q104 and the timing of it couldn't have worked out better. There was shakeups going on with that. And that's when I started to meet the guys, BJ and Bobby Mack, and we really clicked. And it's been great since. They're pros. They're awesome. They're funny. We genuinely like each other. We get along off air. Like it reminds me of a mature version of what I had with the Bear. And I hate to compare, but you do. You know, you compare jobs, you compare things. And at this time in my life, I've got that feeling. If you could bottle a feeling, the feeling that I had with the Bear, feeling like that was my home and that was sort of like my baby, and the Paul Brown Show was like, you know, that was it. This sort of feels like that for this stage of my life I'm in right now.
And there's close contact really between the station you're at now and Edmonton. It's owned by Stingray. They've got rock properties in both markets. You've worked in Edmonton. I know BJ's worked in Edmonton because I was there at the time when he was working, doing mornings, I believe, at 96.3, whatever incarnation of that radio station there was at that time. It doesn't feel like 3 time zones away anymore. The world feels a little bit closer. And I guess the world, it just doesn't feel as far apart anymore.
Yeah, it's easy to pick up and fly. And it was for a long time. It was quite easy to just hop on a plane and you know, go see family and stuff. But again, once I had kids, it changed everything. And especially flying solo with 2 crazy kids. You know, at one point I'm breastfeeding and I'm on the plane and I've got a 2-year-old wanting to run down the hall, you know, flying. And so I'm like, okay, that's enough. You know, it's time to move back.
Well, kids changes things. And UConn got to watch me have kids, had the twins, and he's been trying to groom them as tag team champions for the WWE for, you know, ever since they were born. He's still working on recruiting them, I think.
He won't give that up. Like he's not somebody that lets go of anything. Did he give them names? Because he names everything.
Yeah, he did. I can't remember what it is, but there's this. I mean, it's true. Like Paul Brown, UConn Jack, they leave a mark. Trademark that if you want, but they leave a mark.
A skid mark.
Tell me about the experience in Halifax and being home and what it's been like, the amount of time that you've been there, which has been short so far relative to your stay in Edmonton.
Yeah, it really has. I got back in July. I think my first day on was covering, I think it was either the day before, the day after, like right around the Canada Day weekend. And it is a short amount of time, but it feels so comfortable. we click so well that it feels like it's been a lot longer, if that makes any sense. It feels like I've been here for like forever. It's been awesome. I mean, the guys are great. The city's great. Seeing my folks and stuff every weekend or every other weekend, it's awesome. We're still getting used to it. There's still things that I do miss about Edmonton that makes me think, you know, like just how central it is. There's so much more, but really it comes back to family and building roots and settling down, so to speak, in that sense.
But Halifax is on an upward trajectory right now. I was there like twice in the last year, and it looks different. There's condos going up.
Yeah, I mean, they call it the crane capital. Like, there's just cranes everywhere. It's like Transformers building stuff everywhere, like, which it needs to happen because the main arteries here, it's an old city, and a lot of roads are going to have to be redone. And we moved in the height of the market. The housing market was just absolutely on steroids. To even be in the playing field to buy a house, you had to go in no conditions, 10 G's down, 120 minimum over asking on a house. So I feel bad for my husband because, you know, you're like, what are we doing? You know, you're buying when the market's like super high. Everything seems to be going up with groceries. The sales tax here is like pretty much double than what it was in Alberta. And it's really hard to get used to like that type of stuff.
Sales tax in Alberta is provincially, it's zero. And then you've got the GST. Yeah, I remember that about Nova Scotia. It's like 10, 15%, something crazy.
I think it might be 13, 14, 15. I don't even want to look. I don't want to look at prices of anything. It makes you sick.
Should I move to Halifax?
Are you thinking about moving to Halifax?
It's on a short list.
Really? Well, I missed the ocean like you wouldn't believe. Being landlocked Alberta, the winters were... they were horrible. It is a winter city. Hey, if you embrace winter, fine. I did not embrace winter. And I mean, I'm go, go, go all the time, you know, especially with the kids. I would take them skating outside, be pushing the stroller and try to embrace it. But when it's minus 40 and you're stuck in the house, it's just like, I want to eat a bullet. I missed the ocean. I wanted something a little bit warmer. So yeah, you should. You should come here. Buy a $400,000 house for $715,000, okay? Be a sucker like me.
Yeah, I think about all that stuff. I mean, Marty Forbes comes back to my mind because he's like, you could do mornings here if you'd like, but remember, you're going to be getting up at 4:30 in the morning or 4 in the morning, and it's going to be dark for most of the year. And I'm like, I think I'll stick to afternoons and become a program director.
Which you did.
I definitely did that. I also think about Halifax moving there. I'm like, oh, but the football games will start at 2 p.m. That's too late for me.
Yeah. My husband, like he's huge Oilers fan and sports fan, and he just can't get used to these games starting so late at night. And you watch sports live. You don't want to PVR them.
And by the way, the Mountain Time Zone where Edmonton is, that is the best place for time shifting sports because you can see everything. I used to hack satellite and I would watch everything.
There's certainly pros and cons. That was definitely a pro out there.
And the other thing I think about is bringing a vehicle out to the Maritimes. I'm worried that the whole thing will just rust out with the salt in the air.
Oh yeah, you've got to get that baby undercoated.
Is that how that works?
We're talking about cars, right?
We are.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to undercoat the undercarriage, which I'm actually doing tomorrow. I'm actually getting my car undercoated for the winter. You've got to do it every year.
I didn't know that.
It's a bit of a trade-off. I had no idea you plugged in your car out west. So when I shipped my car out on the railway back in 04, everyone's like, what is it called? A block heater? Is that what it is? So they're like, do you have a block heater? I'm like, what is that? Why are there outlets at the Save-On Foods and the Safeway parking lots? And then you come here, if anyone didn't know, well, what's undercoating? Oh, you salt the roads here? And it's gravel and those plugs out west and salt and rusted cars out east.
By the way, the Halifax winter is no picnic.
Yeah, it can get, as they say out west, it's dry, cold. And then out here, it's a damp cold that gets into your bones. But it's shorter. And yesterday we put up the Christmas lights. It was like maybe zero, no snow on the ground. We did have a snowstorm, but the temperature is going to go up to 7 tonight, and then it's going to be, I think, like 10 degrees tomorrow. But the temperature is going to be right around zero, and it might be a green Christmas this year. So who's to say we'll get some snow?
It's past 11 a.m. where you are. How many cups of coffee was that when you started this interview? I mean, how many cups do you drink every day?
I used to just have two, and now I usually have two or three. This is my third, and I just like to feel jittery 24/7.
I was going to say, do you have a nap? You have kids, so there's no naps with kids.
No, I know. If things align, I will. I can sleep anywhere, anytime, but yeah, my daughter is in primary. She's 5, so she goes to school until 2. And then my 2-year-old, he starts daycare in January. So once they're both in someone else's hands for most of the day, then I might get a nap in. But I would rock a juicy nap any day if I could.
Do you appear on any other stations in the Stingray family for, you know, voice tracking or shows or appearances or anything? Can we hear you anywhere else in the country?
No, not at this time.
Reason I mention that is because if anybody wanted to listen to your show outside of the Maritimes, they would have to get up like in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I've monitored morning shows in the Maritimes. That's a pretty early wake-up call when you're doing that from Manitoba.
Yeah, no kidding. In Vancouver, even worse.
Yeah.
How is it in Manitoba right now? Did you watch the Grey Cup?
I watched the last 2 minutes of it and then the overtime. I'm not a fan of the CFL, and, you know, the game was wedged between the Buffalo Bills, which is my team, and the Green Bay Packers, which is another team in the house. And, you know, I guess I wanted the Blue Bombers to win only for the sole reason that it would make people in my community happy. So that when you go to the store, they've got more of a smile on their face. They went for so long without it. So I'm good with the Bombers winning. I like being in a happy community. With that said, should I move to Halifax?
Yes, be my neighbor.
Where do you live in Halifax?
We live on the outskirts. We have an acreage and we've got a big house and we kind of want it to be closer to the North Shore. So we're out towards like the Fall River area.
Nice.
Grand Lake, close to there. Close to Sidney Crosby. It's probably a 10-minute drive.
It's good to see you again. And we don't see each other nearly often enough over the years, but I know we keep in contact in funny ways, and this being one of them.
No problem. For you, anytime.
The Sound Off Podcast is written and hosted by Matt Kundle. Produced by Evan Serminski. Social media by Courtney Krebsbach. Another great creation from the Sound Off Media Company. Imaging courtesy Core Image Studios. There's always more at soundoffpodcast.com.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.